And it appears to me that in order to file an original action, there is a 9,000 count or 9,000 word count limit on the motion for leave to file, but there isn't one for the actual complaint. And so I wanted to verify that.
Well, what kind of original action are you thinking about filing?
The original action is a complaint against 16 state and federal judges. And the reason that it's come about is that I have gone through all of the state and federal processes to get a remedy or relief, and there is none. And so the last bastion of hope, if you will, is the Supreme Court. And that includes having gone through the appellate process of the Supreme Court as well.
Well, so the original jurisdiction of the court is very limited. Virtually everything that we do is through a cert petition. And the primary way we hear original cases is when there's a suit between two states, like one state suing another state, like alleging that they are taking too much water from a river or something like that. So we don't have original jurisdiction for one private litigant suing another litigant. What I probably ought to do is put you in charge of somebody who would end up processing that, but I think it's unlikely that you would be able to file something like that.
So I appreciate you taking the time to explain that. My research, I've concluded something different, and that's why I'm calling, is to work with the court and find out so that we don't needlessly waste each other's time. The case that I'm referencing is Cowens v. Virginia. And in there, one of the most famous quotes of all times is every person having a claim upon his... The Constitution gave every person having a claim upon a state the right to submit his case to the court of the nation. And so I'm basing the court's jurisdiction not on a statute, but on Article 3, Section 2, which is that the court has jurisdiction over all cases at law and equity. So I'm bringing a case at law and potentially equity because there's injunctive relief. So I'm not going upon the jurisdiction of the court based upon the parties, but upon the nature of the case. So,
let me just pull up the, I should have pulled this up ahead of time, but we would not accept a filing like that. And we are bound by our, both the Constitution and the statute dealing with original jurisdiction.
So if I understand what you just said correctly, that the statute overrules the Constitution, is that correct?
No, but the statute is consistent with the Constitution. And if you look at Article 3 of the Constitution, where is that? It says...
That's what I'm confused about, because if I read Article 3, Section 2, it says right here, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution.
And but see, we have, that outlines what it is that that Congress can give us the authority to do, but our discretion, our jurisdiction is created by statute. And jurisdiction, 1251. Just give me a second here. I'm sorry, I don't have this more at the tip of my fingertips.
That's okay. I understand it's an unusual instance.
Mm-hmm. So this, it's 28 U.S.C. 1251.
Okay.
Jurisdiction of all controversies between two or more states.
So this, Scott, if I could interrupt you, this is the jurisdiction pertaining to the parties of the case. So
this outlines our jurisdiction.
But only pertaining to the parties, because if you see everything in there is all about parties to a case. If you read Cohen's, the case of Cohen's versus Virginia, the court clearly distinguishes in there that there are basically two types of original jurisdiction, or two different types of cases to which the original jurisdiction extends. One is to the type of case, which is here it says in Article 3, Section 2, all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties. Or two, it is the court's jurisdiction extends to the type of case based upon the parties that are there. So if you look at 28 U.S.C. 1251, this is only basically putting into statute form what the Constitution already says about the parties to the case, not the actual type of the case. So I'm not...
I hear you, but that's not the way our practice works. That's not the way our jurisdiction works. We are bound by the statute in terms of jurisdiction. So you can submit something, but what I'm telling you is it's not going to be accepted for filing unless it falls within one of the provisions of 28 U.S.C. 1251. So the main reason I say it is I don't want you to go to the trouble and expense of submitting something if it's not going to be accepted.
And I so appreciate that, Scott. Yeah. Is there a way that you could share with me, because what I'm feeling right now is that, and I don't mean this with any sort of ego or anything like that, but it's very clear to me that you're incorrect about what you're saying. And I know that you're the clerk of court, but how could you imagine the problem that if I submitted this case and I had a right under the Constitution to submit this case, and the clerk of the court didn't know what the Constitution specifically said and then dismissed my case on some grounds that were essentially unlawful? Do you see? I'm not saying that 100% that that's the case, but what if that were to happen? That would be, I mean, just historical, monumentally. So would it be possible for you to review the Cohen's case and for us to talk about it? Because there's clearly the Constitution says one thing as I'm interpreting it, and what you're sharing with me is something different. What you're sharing with me is that essentially that the Constitution isn't what gives the court jurisdiction, it's the statute, if I'm understanding you correctly. And based upon what you shared with me, that statute does not apply to the actual type of case. It applies only to the parties that are in the case.
I'm just telling you the way we would, what we would do with it. I mean, if you know, obviously there's a printing requirement for cases unless you're proceeding in forma pauperis. If you would, if you would want to show it to me before you get it printed, I can look at it. But I know what the answer is going to be, and it's not going to be accepted for filing. So I just don't want to put you to the trouble or expense of doing it.
Okay. How might then, if you could guide me to do this, how might I get my case to a justice or to the justices to challenge this question? Because this is not something that could be challenged in a lower court. This is essentially the rules of the Supreme Court that are, or the rules as you're sharing them with me, that I need to challenge. So is it possible to submit my case to one of the justices directly and have them decide on that issue, or?
No, we don't do it though. I mean, that's what the clerk's office is here for, right, is to determine whether things can be filed. And, you know, this is not new, right? Like, we've had many people that have tried to file original actions, and we've done the same thing, over and controversial here.
Well, is it the clerk's office that has actually denied these prior original actions, or was it the justices? Did it ever make it to the justices?
You know, let me see if I have, let me can I call you back? I've got your number. Let me call you back and see if I can find any instances that are on the record where it shows that that's not been permitted, and I'll give you a call back.
Oh, that would be wonderful, Scott. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much. I'd really appreciate that. Look, I'm willing to admit, Scott, if I'm wrong, I'm so willing to admit that. And I'm so grateful for your time. But at the present time, it's not adding up for me. So I really appreciate the fact that you're taking the time to help me. And like I said, if it's not possible, I'll go away. Okay, buddy. Thank you.
Okay.